This is the Techno Buffet Podcast, episode number 56. What are we up to now? Oh, excuse me, 664. I was 100 off. Recorded February 7th, 2024. In 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Techno Buffet Podcast.
Woohoo!
Yep, and there are some interesting things going on. I, for one, am at the moment not able to lift my arms over my head, which is always fun. But why would I want to? I'm going to keep them down.
Okay.
I just came back from physical therapy. They decided I needed to strengthen those muscles, so now they are not happy with me. Anyway, I also just reprogrammed, or actually programmed for the first time, and flashed the two RAT GDOs that I bought a while back that arrived in December that I still haven't gotten around to installing.
Right.
I think progress is when you actually flash the software on there so that you can install them. But the family handyman is going to be here tomorrow because there's a unrelated garage door problem that he's supposed to help me with.
Right.
Namely, that the garage door is not perfectly aligned. He was here looking at that on Monday and told me he would be back on Thursday. So, in the meantime, there's cold air blowing into my garage, and it's cold outside. So, I did want to play with the garage myself, but various people were convinced that I would break something, hit myself in the head, and hurt myself if I didn't have a safety person. Apparently people are worried about my clumsiness when it comes to mechanical versus electronics. Go figure. So we'll see if while I have somebody to assist me, if I can get the RAT GDO wired in. Figured as long as
I bet you can.
Well, I was going to do it myself, but I figured I have to bring the person in about the hinge situation. On Monday, he got into a large argument with the manufacturer of the replacement garage door hinges and called me to mediate between him and the customer service individual, which I believe was also, since it's a small business, the owner of the business and the inventor of the hinge. By the way, he was wrong, but that's a whole other problem. Other than that, there's a new version of Home Assistant.
Ooh.
Yeah, which prompted me. I read some of the pre-release notes and noticed that this version is keyed into Python 3.1.2.
That's interesting.
So remember, I don't do one of their complete installs. I actually install the thing on top of my server.
Well, that's so shady.
I'm not using a container or a dedicated device. So, I decided to update my server, which is running, this one's running Ubuntu 22.04 LTS. Are you familiar with it, Terry? You know what the 22
LTS?
No, you know what the 22.04 and the LTS is.
It's 2022, April, and it's a long-term support.
Yeah, so I'm saying you know that the release cycle for a long-term support version of Ubuntu is 2 years, which means the next version is coming up in about 2 months.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Okay, so LTS was released every 2 years. So it's released with the, essentially, there was the 18.04, the 22.04, the 20.04, the 22.04, and next will be the 24.04. So essentially what you're guaranteed is stability for 2 years. Which in a server is important. So my desktop machine is running more bleeding edge software.
Sure.
Not like beta, but it's running something that has a regular release cycle instead of a 2 year one. So sometimes with a long term support release, you need to update the version of a particular piece of software. So for example, moving to the latest version of Python, that wouldn't happen automatically because that is a version change for stability. So that I had to do manually. So I wanted to prepare for that. The problem is there are a bunch of other things that aren't prepared for 3.12. So because Ubuntu allows you to install multiple versions in parallel, some things are running 3.1.0, and I have 3.1.2 running also and installed, and I'm going to use that in a virtual environment separate from the other stuff, which will default to 3.1.0, so that I can get Home Assistant on the version that it wants to be on. But while I installed all of that, and it sent me down the rabbit hole of updating my Unify controller and making a whole bunch of other tweaks, including switching from the bundled version of Docker into the Docker Community Edition for no particular reason other than because that's also based on Python, I was causing some version conflicts.
Right.
So essentially everything is now on whatever version it needed to be on. But again, rabbit hole. So I am now prepared. I did not update this because I need to do that at a time when if something goes wrong, I have time to play with it. But there are a lot of new things. 21 new integrations, according to this.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So what we have is better drag and drop support for automations. So before you had to essentially explicitly enable reordering, but now you can just sort of drag things, which is super cool. Well, I never understood, since being able to drag things without having to click a button to drag things has always been a user interface thing, at least for longer than this.
I've always had to switch to YAML and copy and paste, or cut and paste.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is I understand you need a button to switch to YAML, but I think dragging things around once they got a graphical interface, I'm surprised you needed a button for that. But you can also...
Drag and drop is really complicated, so that it took time to do that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I'm just saying these people seem to know what they're doing. But moving along, exporting data from the history dashboard. So now you have the ability to actually export the data into a CSV file and import it somewhere else. So I appreciate that, because not everybody wants to hook it into, let's say, Node-RED or a InfluxDB database. Some people just want a nice CSV file to go into Excel or another spreadsheet program.
Awesome.
This one I'm looking forward to. Improved error responses when using Assist. So my biggest problem is I don't know why Assist has a problem with my voice. So even though I can do those sentence tuning options that they offer to essentially teach it how I do things, it doesn't really tell me what the problem is. So the first step that they're doing is that it's going to tell you what in the event that your intention is understood, but it doesn't understand something else, it's going to tell you what. So if it knows that you want to turn something on, but it didn't understand the name of the device, then it will tell you it didn't understand the name of the device, but it knew you wanted to turn something on. So that's the sort of thing it's going to be doing. They also have custom assist responses and automations using the sentence trigger. So until now, if you use the sentence trigger in an automation, which essentially is when this sentence is said, do this, the only response it was giving before was done. And the only way to provide a custom response was in YAML. So now this release allows you to do that directly in the automation editor.
Cool.
So you can essentially customize your response and template it. So their example is when the sentence, what is the temperature in my home, is said, confirm that that Paulus is home, so Paulus being the creator of Home Assistant, who I assume made the screenshot, then set conversation response, the temperature in the living room is, and then template for the living room temperature sensor, and the temperature in the bedroom is template for the bedroom sensor. So I'm going to look forward to this because this is exactly the type of conversational interaction I want. I want to be able to ask, what is the temperature in the living room? Or what is the thermostat set to? And I have no problem playing with it until I get it right.
Well, you can do that now. You can ask it what the temperature is. It'll just say, done.
That isn't very helpful, is it?
No.
But What I'm saying is it won't do it now. Remember, now it can do something better. So I appreciate that they've realized that people want to craft custom interactions between a question and an answer. Or I'm sure they realized that previously, as in they've realized the potential of that problem and put a solution in place. They have added a configuration dashboard to show you a list of all of your assist devices. So I'm sure there will be additional opportunities. Now that there's a place to see all of your assist devices, I assume there will be opportunities for to do things in that dashboard.
One would hope.
If you have Zigbee devices and you use ZHA, it now provides update entities to Home Assistant, so it can do updates.
Yeah, but that's only if you use ZHA.
Yeah, Zigbee to MQTT already does updates.
Yeah.
Yeah, although not every device is supported. Right now, it seems like it for Zigbee to MQTT, it seems like the third reality devices, the Osram, which I have some old ones of, and the IKEA stuff that I have left over, although I've been slowly removing the IKEA stuff, mostly because I have better options. I like the third reality stuff, though. That's pretty reliable. Anyway, Matter Diagnostics and Actions. So I don't have any Matter devices, so I don't know what I'm going to do with that, but... Again, I'm glad that Matter is getting better because I know that someday, as it iterates, it will matter to me. It just doesn't matter now. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You were silent there.
I got distracted by work.
I thought something was the matter. I didn't even get a guffaw at that one. Okay. Anyway, they've changed the handling of icons. So I just love how they've described it. We completely changed how Home Assistant handles icons under the hood. A big effort from many people with almost no change. Almost everything looks just the same as it did before. So
that's cool.
Yeah, well.
Why?
Well, again, they changed how it was handled. They said they did make improvements. Integrations can now provide icons for things like fan speeds or thermostat presets. So essentially, it allowed the integrations to customize icons themselves. And service call actions can now have an icon.
Nice.
Areas can now have icons. If you have an integration with an authentication issue, it will now report that in the repairs dashboard as something that needs to be repaired. The proximity integration has been revamped. For one, it is no longer a custom domain, so there's no longer a proximity type entity. It is now going to be done as a sensor entity instead, which is fine because why do you need a custom thing for just one integration anyway?
And you get two sensors, right?
Yes. So you get two sensors, but it's a little more, we'll just say, complicated.
Yes.
So what we have is we have sensors that indicate, you know, the direction of travel, the distance, the nearest, essentially, direction of travel, etc. So what you end up being able to do is to just get back to sort of the simplified thing. You can do a little math. But it does give you more details than before. So I have one proximity element that I tried to use to figure out when I was on my way home from work. But it doesn't quite work. Not because it doesn't work as an integration. I couldn't quite figure out the logic of the automation on that. Because I sometimes stop on the way home, for example.
Right.
I was in the office today, and I stopped and had a physical therapy appointment. Then I went to the supermarket near the physical therapy place and picked up something. And then I came back here. So how would it know if I wanted it to, let's say, turn on the heat while I was on my way home, I've never been able to quite figure out, well, what if I stop somewhere? And can it figure that out? But someday I'll have a better idea about that. Moving along, a few interesting things that are noteworthy that are in the brief notes here. When you change the type of a switch entity, you now have the option to invert its behavior. So if you turn the switch into a light, you can invert the behavior so that off on the switch is on the light.
I'm sure they did this for a reason. I'm trying to think of a good example of why that's useful.
I have one. I did it on the Tasmota side, but I have ambient lighting where I've made it so that because I want it to, when I say to turn off the light in the room, you know, so essentially, you know how Helm Assistant can turn off all the lights in an area or turn on all the lights in an area?
Yeah.
I have something that behaves as a light, but it's inverted, so it's on when all the other lights are off, and it's the ambient light in the room. So it's, I got the idea from the hotel I stayed at in Manila in 2017.
Yeah.
I remember that because I was recording from there. When you shut off the lights in the room, there was like an underbed light so that you could walk around the room and not trip over things while going to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I liked that feature, so I reproduced it using essentially an LED light plugged into a smart plug that's under my, I have a media unit with legs, so I essentially just adhered it to the bottom of that.
Right.
So it's inverted and it behaves like a light. So every time the lights in the room turn off, it turns on. And every time any of the lights in the room turn on, it turns off. So that is actually an exact use for this sort of thing. Where the reason for me to invert behavior is because I want it to work the opposite of how I would expect, which is what I just explained.
Okay.
I'm sure there are other things like that. If you have an EcoVac, apparently, it's gotten a lot of new models and new entities. There's automatic cleanup of unused refresh tokens. So if a device hasn't used Home Assistant for 90 days, it will log you out. I agree with that one. If you aren't using your refresh tokens, they should expire and make you log in again. The Tuya integration can now be set up using their app. No need for more complicated procedures. If you have a utility meter that turns off at night, let's say a solar inverter, you can set it to be available even when the source entity is unavailable so that it won't show as unavailable because, again, it's just off because there's no sun. TP-Link integration now supports newer devices. There are now sound event sensors for the Unify Protect integration. If you like to do templating in YAML, apparently there is a Bitwise XOR filter for you to use.
Sure, because that's useful.
I'm assuming it's useful for the person who added it in.
I'm sure.
Apparently, the Google Generative AI conversation allows using the new Gemini Pro models. So if you want to do generative AI with Google, again, upgrade there. Some new integrations, AirTouch 5 ducted air conditioning systems, Bang & Olufsen BioLab and BioSound devices, a Bring, which is apparently some sort of shopping list service. You can import your energy usage from an Elvia-operated grid. I don't know if I
have one. I'm still waiting for mine.
What was that?
I'm still waiting for my electric company to be anywhere remotely, you know, with an API.
Well, again, fortunately, Con Edison seems to use O-Power, so they were able to get that in a few versions ago, if you remember. So I know how much energy I used this morning. It has a bit of a delay, but at least I can see my historic usage for the previous day. For example, there was a big boost of... And this is very interesting. Gas and energy consumption both boosted at around 7 o'clock last night. And then they went down from 8 to 11, and then from 11 to 12, they went back up again. I wonder why. Maybe someday I'll be able to figure out how to find out. But anyway, that's my mystery, and I'm going to continue wondering about it. A few other things. You have Epion air quality sensors, Govee lights. So I've used Govee products. I use their water sensors because they're 433. megahertz and I can pick them up. But apparently now you can integrate Govee lights into Home Assistant using local API control. And they have instructions for enabling local API control. So all I will say is if I can do local API control on a Govee light, then I'm in on buying a Govee light if I want one. I haven't decided I want a Govee light, but if I need one, that is the I will look at that company. Apparently, there is now an integration that allows you to look at Home Assistant analytics insights. So I don't know why you would want to look at the analytics for Home Assistant inside your Home Assistant instance, but apparently you can do that now. You can get weather. Yeah. You can get weather from the Hong Kong Observatory. You can control your I don't know, is that Hume or Hum smart sauna heaters. You can control your La Marzarco espresso machine. You can monitor your Leo One health device. Monitor your My Uplink supported devices. What is a My Uplink supported device? I don't even know what those are. Oh, it's some sort of custom device thing, it looks like. Anyway. We have Rabbit Air, which is an air purifier. We have the Rainforest Rave N Energy Monitor, Romy Vacuum Cleaners, Teddy Smart Locks, TEDE. You can pull telemetry. Pull in live telemetry data from your Tesla vehicle via the Fleet API.
Oh, that's cool.
If you have a Tesla.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of useless if you don't.
I don't know. Teslas scare me.
You know, have I given my Tesla insurance is unbelievably expensive speech?
No, but I would believe you. But you know why I find them scary.
No.
Let's see. A car. I'm sure there's something I'm luttish in. Is that a verb? I don't know. But I will say the reason why it worries me is the reports of things like Tesla built a car that cannot go through a car wash. And then when people took it through a car wash and it corroded certain parts, Tesla said that it was the customer's fault. So you can't wash your car because they didn't properly insulate certain things. Okay. As I said, it has nothing to do with electric cars. If electric cars got to the point at which I decided to buy one, I'm just saying that the reputation Tesla has in terms of their quality. On the other hand, I still like Boeing, despite the fact they're having a large amount of quality problems right now. On the other hand, I have not been on a Boeing plane in ages, so liking something doesn't necessarily mean you patronize it. Have you been on a Boeing plane recently?
I have been on Boeing planes before, yes.
No, I've been on one.
Not a 737 MAX.
Yeah, I'm just saying I have not. I fly JetBlue a lot, and they're all Airbus, so I have not been on a Boeing plane in a while. The reason for me not being on a Boeing plane has had nothing to do with their recent issues. Just where I was going, Boeing was not. So, anyway, moving along, Techno VE, smart charging stations, can be controlled. And you can track your GPS devices by pulling data from a TrackR server.
That's cool.
Yeah, they also added some integrations to be set up from the UI, including GPSD, EcoVax, Lupus Electronics, Lutron, Proximity, and Time and Date. I don't know why, and I should look into this. Why is it that you would want to collect data in your Home Assistant from a GPS receiver? Is that useful unless your house moves?
I suppose. Well, it's probably going to be mobile, and maybe it's part of tracking your location for, you know, yeah. Where are you stuff.
I suppose. That sort of makes sense. Anyway, so a lot of things there, and I'm looking forward to doing some installation at some point when I actually have time, because project after project lately. I spent a lot of the weekend engaged in one of the projects that I've been putting off for a while now.
Yeah.
Dusting. I hate dusting.
more often you do it, the less bad it is.
Yeah, well, I had to get into the, you know, the areas where you, that you don't dust very often, like the, so I was up on a step stool dusting the tops of furnitures. So I have like bookcases and the top tends to get dusty, but I don't get up there very often. So did that. And then I bought a new air purifier to try to hasten the return of excessive dust. So I'm just wondering, can you inhale too much lemon pledge?
You can inhale too much oxygen.
I suppose. I'm just wondering if there are health risks to too much pledge exposure. Probably. Aerosol inhalation is probably bad for you. Anyway, a few other things happened this week. Microsoft Edge for Android is getting support for extensions.
Wow, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Progress.
If that's what you want to call it.
I like extensions. I'm not interested in Edge, but I like extensions.
I'll buy that.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's a redesign of the Google Preferences part of Android settings. Again, I will be excited if I can find the setting I'm looking for. If you like to take advantage of those cached links inside Google Search, where it could show you a cached version of a site, apparently they are retiring that feature.
I'm sorry.
I guess it'll just have to be archive.org.
That's right.
YouTube Premium has announced 100 million subscribers. I know you are one of them, Jerry.
I am.
That's what I'm saying. You're one of the 100 million.
Way. I love YouTube Premium. I'm not gonna lie. We spend money on various streaming services, and YouTube Premium is probably our lowest cost per hour because we by a large margin.
I assume YouTube also makes more of a profit because remember, a lot of the stuff on YouTube, Google bears no cost for actually creating.
Yeah.
So I'm sure their profit margin is better than, let's say, Netflix or Paramount Plus, where they actually have to license content. A lot of the content that Google gets, they're not really paying for. They may have to share in the monetization, but they're not.
Well, I don't know. I bet the moderation takes up a lot of profit. Whereas
that's a good point.
YouTube, or whereas Netflix and Hulu and such don't run into moderation issues.
That is a good point. Either way, I decided to, while I was cleaning, I used YouTube Music through the YouTube app on a Roku device that I keep in the room I was dusting.
Cool.
Since, as I mentioned, my primary viewing device is in my living room, and that's a Google TV right now. Hooked into a Roku TV, that's had the Roku part disabled. So it was interesting to watch it sort of jump from music style to music style. And I was trying to figure out how it decided this was the music it was going to jump between. At one point, it was playing music videos of the Rockefeller explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with them?
No.
What's the best way to describe this? Do you remember Chuck E. Cheese?
Yes.
Do you remember their competitor? That merged with them and took over their name. Showtime Pizza Theater.
Was it Never heard.
Essentially, the Rockefeller Explosion was an animatronic band that used to play at the Chuck E. Cheese competitor before they acquired the bankrupt Chuck E. Cheese and merged with them and took the Chuck E. Cheese name and rebranded all of the Rockefeller Explosions as, I forget what the name of the Chuck E. Cheese band was. So apparently, and I think I figured out how it got into this rotation. A few years ago, I read an article about how people were essentially restoring these animatronic bands that have been taken out of these restaurants, and like in their basements or in like hobby rooms. And then the original developer of it was putting videos up, and hobbyists were of them reprogramming it with new, we'll say, more modern songs. I think at that time, a few years ago, I must have watched one of these, because I'm almost positive I looked to see what it was like. And now it's somehow YouTube Music has remembered this and added it to my rotation. Or it could have been I watched that video honoring the closure of the Country Bear Jamboree last week. By the way, the Country Bear Jamboree closed.
Ooh.
I'm sad. There aren't that many opening day things at Disney World left. There's something simple about a bunch of animatronic bears singing country music that some of the more modern rides do not recapture that nice simplicity. Anyway, animatronic bears aside, Mozilla has apparently started a service, so they have pledged to remove you from listing sites for $108 a year. So Monitor Plus, and they were doing some, simple monitor stuff previously, is a will monitor people search sites along with known data breaches and take care of the removal process for you.
Oh, interesting.
So it's $14 month to month, or 108, which is $9 a month for a year subscription. What you can do for free is you can scan and see where they found your information, and then go remove it yourself. So you can find out, they won't monitor it for you for free, but they will tell you what they could be monitoring for free. And I do appreciate, as a Firefox user, that Mozilla is trying to find a money source to keep things going.
That's funny.
Remember, for a while there, their largest money source was Google searches in the Firefox browser. So it's not like it's always going to be able to rely on that. Android 15, which is the next version, might let you stream audio to the entire family. So apparently, they're looking to bringing Bluetooth LE audio streams for nearby devices. So
Right.
you'd be able to find a list of nearby streams over Bluetooth LE and join those streams.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That'd make for like entirely silent raves.
Yeah, so this is apparently what the Bluetooth special interest group called Auracast. So that it would let users in a public or private space connect to a device that was broadcasting audio. And it would allow for more than one. So everybody watching television could have their headphones in, for example, because the television might be one of these devices. So that's interesting. I think
I like it.
I think once Android has that support, I think manufacturers that transmit will possibly put that in so that people could use it. If you're a Google Maps user, apparently Android has picked up a feature that iOS has, which is a small box showing the temperature, weather conditions, and air quality index in a specific area. So essentially, if you were looking at a map, you will be able to see what the temperature and weather and air quality is in that area. And apparently, iOS has had that feature, specifically Google Maps on iOS, for apparently 4 years. Interesting. Google Photos might be adding a feature that would automatically shoot your friends a quick weekly update. Please tell me they're not going to turn that on by default. No, because you heard this, Plex did this a little while ago, where apparently Plex started automatically turned on the social sharing feature where it would tell other people what you who you had connected to, what you were watching. Not while you were watching it, but sort of giving you the sort of week in review thing. And it sort of annoyed people because it's, when did I say I wanted my friends to know what I was up to?
Yep.
Well, you didn't turn off the feature. Well, did you tell me the feature was there? Did you? It's a new feature. Did you start it off in an off position or an on position? Anyway, these things happen, but it's still annoying when they do. But again, I would not want my pictures to be shared, even with people I was close to, without me knowing it, because there may be something I took a picture of I don't want them to know about. For example, Jerry, what if you were shopping for a gift and you took pictures of items and then your friends and family knew that you were shopping for a gift?
Yep.
And let's assume it was one of them.
Gifts spoiled.
Yeah. Apparently, Android phones will score an extra year of warranty repair under new EU rules. So manufacturers are now obligated to add an extra 12 months to the warranty after fixing a product, according to a deal approved by the European Council.
Interesting.
Basically, products in Europe get a two-year guarantee, but after they fix the product, they have to have a warranty on essentially the repaired item for 12 months. We'll see how that works out.
Yep. Yay, government interference in private markets.
Not our government. Our government can't seem to actually make a decision about anything that's useful. Anyway, yep. My annoyance about the fact that... that's sort of the question and I'll ask you. I know you have a different political perspective than I do. But would you rather have the government effective, even if they do things you don't like, or would you rather have the government completely ineffective and doing absolutely nothing that is useful to anybody, whether you like it or not? I'm fine if you don't have an easy answer to that question.
But it's
it's just something I sort of think about, which is, I would like the government to be effective because it frustrates me that essentially the government is not effective. And again, we pay taxes. They're supposed to be used to do things. There's a whole bunch of other things that the government is supposed to do that they're not doing because they are ineffective. However,
I think we may disagree on what the government is supposed to do.
Well, no, I think we agree on whether that is what the government is supposed to do. I think we disagree on whether or not that is the right thing for the government to be
doing. I think the government wants to do some things, and if they are ineffective, then that may make me feel better because they are unlikely to do the things that they want to do that I believe are none of their friggin' business.
That's why I said it was complicated, because there's the same thing. There are many things that the government has done that I don't think they should have done that I don't want them to be involved in. But
an effective government would be better at doing things I don't want it doing.
That's the problem.
Yep.
But at the same time, I am frustrated that the things that I want the government to do are being done ineffectively, as well as the things I don't want the government to do. And I can't say whether or not which one of those things is a greater imperative for me. Do I want the government to continue as it is doing so that it doesn't do the things I'm worried it's going to do? Or do I want the government to be more effective so that it might, and I'll emphasize the might, occasionally do something I want? And there's no easy answer to that question, I think. But it's an interesting thought, isn't it? Anyway, moving along. Your Samsung Smart TV is losing Google Assistant. So, there it is. I don't have a
Samsung. I wonder if Samsung and Google are back at it.
Not exactly. So, Google is essentially removing a bunch of features from Assistant. As you know, it's trying to integrate it with Bard, and I'm guessing that they're just not going to continue to support some older devices. Remember, these are 2020, 2021, and 2022 smart models. So we're not going to support older TVs, even though for a TV, 4 years is not exactly that old, but you can always plug in an external device. That's why I'm upset that you can't get a dumb television where you can plug in a box that can be upgraded for more cheaply than the panel. I honestly feel that that's a consumption issue, where a television's lifespan would be extended if the software on the television wasn't tied to the panel. But
I agree. That's why I like Roku boxes and external boxes.
Yeah, but the problem is
he lives and dies by the built-in software.
But here's the thing. I would accept that if it were easier to tell the television just turn all of that off and act like a dumb TV.
Yep.
And not some of them actually allow you to do that, but not all of them. For example,
I have a TV downstairs. It's got a Fire Cube on it. Every time I turn it on, it starts up that little bar at the bottom of what application would you like to start? I don't want you to show that to me. I don't care.
Well, with the Roku TV, which is the TCL I have that I hook the Google TV into, there was an option to disable the Roku software. And it just has an application switcher. And there's a setting default to the last input, which is what I do. So it comes on, it defaults to the last input, which is the Google TV, and we're all set. The people at Android Police have said that you should not hold your breath for Google's new Find Your Device network, because apparently both Google and Apple are waiting for further guidance from regulators. Which is always interesting. So the detecting unwanted location tracker specifications, which Google, Apple, and other companies developed, needs to be finalized by the IETF. And apparently, the IETF and various other involved people have not finalized this, therefore they cannot implement the upgraded network. I don't know. I have actually gotten the an unknown tracker is near you alert.
Really?
Yes. In my defense, I got that for a very specific reason.
Which is?
I was on a train, and somebody must have had an AirTag in their bag not far from me. So my phone thought that essentially an AirTag was following me, when it technically was, because we were both on the same train.
Ooh.
Nothing's perfect, but I sort of get that. It had all the indications that you were moving at a high rate of speed and a Bluetooth device was still with you, and it was not registered to you. That's exactly what it's supposed to be telling you. It just misunderstood what the reason why those things were true was. But was I being tracked by a stalker, the same factors would have come into play. Google has said that the assistant driving mode isn't dying, but everybody thinks it's dead. So
what?
Yeah, so there's no app launcher. And so these are the what happened was, if you remember, you used to be able to launch Android Auto as an application on your phone.
Oh, yes.
And they got rid of it, and they said, don't worry about it. We're going to give you assistant driving mode in the assistant app. And now they're getting rid of that. And effectively speaking, you sort of have a driving mode in Maps. So Maps has a driving mode where you would have media controls and an assistant shortcut while navigating, but no.
Right.
So basically, again, another thing is dead.
Oh.
Yeah, at least I have Android Auto still. And finally, if you are a Verizon user, they have finally switched to Google's Jibe for RCS. So AT&T and T-Mobile already switched over. And again, that will allow them to enable all of the features that RCS offers.
Huh.
So I do have a story for you that maybe you can give me some advice over.
Okay.
So I agonized over this for a week. So someone asked me, can you test this phone number for me? Every time somebody calls this phone number and buys something, I get a commission. With me so far, Ter?
Yes.
I know you are familiar with those sort of things from your advertising days. But anyway, so I said I don't want them to have my actual phone number because I don't want, if I'm pretending to buy a product that I'm not actually going to buy in order to help you test this, I don't want them calling me to follow up.
Right.
So I said, well, okay, well, I'll do caller ID blocking, except the number I was given was a toll-free number, and you can't do caller ID blocking on a toll-free number. So I said, okay, maybe I'll get one of those things where, you know, where you can get like a temporary phone number and use it for like for a couple bucks, just to see what that's like. And then I started reading the reviews for things like Burner and Hushed, and what was it, Text Now, I think is one of them. And they seem to have very bad reviews. So then I said, well, do they still have payphones? Can I like go to a payphone and dial a toll-free number? By the way, the answer to that is, if you can find one, which I could not, by the way. So I ended up getting that person very disappointed in me that I would not do them this favor and pretend to be a customer for them to see how the service was. So I'm just going to ask, does anybody, you or anybody listening, have any advice? If I come into this scenario in the future and I want to anonymously call a phone number, let's say I may or may not want that person to be able to call me back. Again, do I need? Is it just for outgoing or is it for outgoing and incoming? I'll let you, if you have any advice on either of those, give it to me. But if anybody has any thoughts, please tell me.
I got nothing.
You know, I even was trying to look up, can you get like an eSIM card for your phone? Since you can have multiple eSIMs with a number that will only work for like 10 days.
That'd be cool.
That's fairly popular in Europe. Not as popular apparently in the US. But anyway, I don't know. But the only services I found that really did eSIMs for people in the US were the ones who use eSIMs for data only when they go abroad.
Right.
By the way, the prices on that are really good. I'm saying that because that's one of the reasons I've kept Fi over the years for my rare international travel. And I'm emphasizing the rare. So I don't know if at some point in the future I might dump Fi, go with a less expensive service like, let's say, Mint Mobile. And then if I'm leaving the country, just use an eSIM and buy a week's worth of data. As I said, the prices are really good. Somebody recommended Airalo, AIRALO, as one of those services. Seemed to be nice. Go on, download an eSIM, activate it on your phone, use it, go home, turn your regular SIM back on. Happy ending.
Yep.
Well, we'll see if it ever happens. Anyway, so that is my sort of weird thing that I was exploring. And you've known me long enough to know that I end up down these sort of weird rabbit holes of trying to figure out these sort of strange things for no particular reason.
Right.
Like, what if I needed an extra phone number for just a couple of days? What if I needed to call a toll-free number? And it used to be you could do that through Skype, but I don't think Skype is as much of a thing as it used to be.
Right. So, I think the problem, the reason you can't do that is because spam callers. So if you could do that then and cheaply and easily,
yeah,
then it would be abused.
I know, but you understand why I'm thinking about it.
Although, maybe that means that if you were to provide such a service, you would have a never-ending list of customers.
I mean, the solution is for me to not call potentially shady 800 numbers.
Also an option?
To test them out for someone. By the way, I don't know. I will never know whether or not that was a shady organization. On the other hand, it is what it is. So we'll see what projects I get through in the next few days if the RAT GDOs get installed. Because if the gentleman who's coming to fix the garage door doesn't help me out by installing them, and when I say help me out, it's not convenient to get to the garage door motor. So it's really hard for me to see up there. So I really just need somebody to tell me if I'm plugging the wires into the right place because I cannot see the panel. And he's smaller than I am. Anyway, I know this because he somehow succeeded in getting up there without a ladder. But that's another story.
That's funny.
Why he didn't use the ladder, I don't know. But aside from that, again, I have a pile of projects to work on here, including mounting that old tablet that I turned into a kiosk using the Fully Kiosk browser, which integrates with Home Assistant. I have a project to retrofit a computer that's sitting here that needs a new operating system installed on it. So every week there's a new adventure around here.
I'm glad to hear it.
If you can consider dusting for 2 days to be an adventure. On a positive note, I'm sleeping a lot better because the room I spent most of the time dusting was my bedroom. So I think that's better for my health. So until next time, Jerry.
Until next time, I would say, bye, folks.
Goodbye and good night.